This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today is Juneteenth. The holiday marks the completion of the long process of emancipating America's slaves. After Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1, 1863, it took a full 2.5 years before the Union Army made it to Texas and freed an estimated 250,000 slaves still in bondage there. Samuel Williams was still a boy when he was liberated from slavery in South Carolina. He eventually made his way to Springfield, Vermont, where he raised a family. And he wrote a pseudonymous memoir giving voice to his early life in slavery and the struggles of starting over. Susanna Ashton is chair of the English department at Clemson University in South Carolina. She specializes in American slave narratives, and she has a new exhibit online looking into Williams's work and the unique perspective his memoir gives. She joins us now to tell us more. Professor Ashton, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and I'm glad that you can tell us a little bit more about Samuel Williams and his memoir. The memoir is called Before the War and After the Union. It was published in 1929 under the name Samuel Alexon. How did you become aware of this text?
Well, the text has a couple of copies around in libraries here and there, and a couple of scholars over the years have sort of noted that it existed, but nobody had ever paid much attention to it. But I'm a South Carolinian now, and I've been working on how the history of slavery in South Carolina itself is understood. And I was looking into collecting some little-known or very obscure South Carolina slave narratives, and I stumbled across a memoir by a man named Sam Alexon about his life in Charleston, South Carolina, under slavery. And that's when I first sort of thought there is something pretty incredible in this story to share. And I featured it as part of a edited collection of South Carolina slave narratives belonging to South Carolina.
You're careful to say you didn't discover this. As you said, it was out there, but you certainly wanted to highlight it, and you say there's something special in it. Why? What do you think was special or that people should be reading in this narrative?
Well, there are a couple of historical facts in it and stories and things in it that are very rare and uncommon, and we have very little information from the perspective of an enslaved person. So to begin with, it's an urban narrative. It's about his life as a child, and then later a young man, largely in Charleston, South Carolina, living in an urban environment with the dangers and pleasures and opportunities and difficulties of that situation. And we have very few sources of information about what that experience was like, running from courtyard to courtyard and experiencing the congestion and excitement and encounters with other people that you could have, even if you're enslaved, when you live in an urban environment. So that itself made it rather unique and important. He also includes a discussion of how he was forced to labor and to serve a Confederate officer who was based in Secessionville on James Island in South Carolina during the Civil War, a horrifyingly dangerous prospect and situation that he was probably about 10 years old was forced into. And that's an account you really rarely see in our popular histories of the Civil War. He talks about starvation. He talks about separation from his family. But he also speaks, and this is another reason why the narrative is so special, is he also speaks with a lot of love for black and white people he knew when he was enslaved. He talks about a lot of love for his city, for the culture of the South at the time. It's a complicated, you know, and sometimes contradictory narrative, which makes it so human and so important for us to understand.
You say that's one of the things that makes it special. Is that rare, or do you see that in these slave narratives that there was that sort of warmth in addition to talking about the horrors of slavery?
Well, all life stories are contradictory. I think that's what makes them powerful and real to us, right? We always have conflicted memories. I think when people talk about slavery, particularly, they don't want to acknowledge that there could have been any love in an upbringing or any moments of nostalgia or pleasure. But of course, we're all human and we're all complicated, and he remembers his story in his own terms. But he still, amidst warm memories of people he cherished, he will also drop sudden horrifying statements, such as one about how he saw his mother sold away with his sisters and didn't see them for years afterwards, until years afterwards. So, I mean, he can fold in some warm memories with sort of reminders of the reality of the absolute barbarity under which he was raised.
That's one of the most important reasons to be able to read a first-person narrative, to actually get that unfiltered sense of someone's own life, how they perceive their life. And one of the reasons why I imagine it's been important to you to highlight William's memoir, because here you can read him talking about his life in his own terms, not some filtered version of history.
Absolutely. And what was really delightful was after I came out with an edited version of his narrative under the name Alexson, one of his descendants, one of the descendants of this man, contacted me and let me know that the real name of the author was Williams. And I was gobsmacked and delighted and horrified that I hadn't been able to figure that out, because, of course, in retrospect, there were plenty of clues. But knowing that, I thought, oh, well, once you have a name can unlock a much richer history and story. So over the past couple of years, I started tracking what happened to this man, Samuel Williams, and how did he end up in Vermont, and what was his life like in Vermont, and what led him to write his narrative in the 20th century. And so a very different and much longer, richer American story that goes all the way up into World War II evolved. So if I had simply just had the narrative, his story would have ended around 1914. But I believe he lived through 1946.
What was his life like in Vermont?
Well, at first, he has a lot of terrific things to say about the pie.
Literally, the pie. They eat the pie you eat.
The pie. Yes. He was leaving behind a lot of desperation and hunger and poverty and suffering in late 19th century South Carolina. And he followed some opportunities for work. We don't quite know what they were exactly, but he certainly ended up working as a domestic servant for wealthy families in Vermont, sort of summer people. And his daughter, he had several children who were raised there. One of his daughters became a cook. And so we have him showing up in census records, living with wealthy families where he was a furnace man, I think, or a servant of some sort. And his daughter worked as a cook with wealthy Vermont families, one of them in Windsor, Vermont. He loved the school system. One of the things he comments on in his memoir is the integrated school system in Springfield. He was just thrilled after the struggles he had with his own education back in South Carolina to be able to enroll his children in the Vermont public school system alongside white children. As a matter of fact, he described the Springfield, Vermont school system as, quote, perfect, unquote, which is truly high praise indeed. So he really appreciated the opportunities. And he lived in Vermont for, you know, decades and decades. But what's and he but even in Vermont, he held on to a South Carolina identity as well. And he described himself as a South Carolinian and a Charlestonian, and how warmly and important those memories were to him. And so he saw no contradiction in being a nation, right? And being in Vermont and South Carolina at the same time, tying those two identities together. And it's rare, even in this day and age, that we tie the words of Vermont and South Carolina together in the same sentence. But we are all neighbors. And that's another really beautiful and important aspect of his story.
Well, Susanna Ashton, I really appreciate you telling us a little bit about Samuel Williams and his memoir Before the War and After the Union, and about his life in Vermont as well. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Susanna Ashton is chair of the English department at Clemson University in South Carolina, and we have a link to more information about her exhibit on Samuel Williams and his memoir. You'll find it at vpr.net.